Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast with your host, South Cox of Stalker Stick Bows.
Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast. This is South Cox. It is the last day of March as I record this. Spring break here, and I've got a couple kids with me. My wife's on vacation. She took one of the kids, so I've only got two of them to wrangle. If you hear any banging, that's probably just them trying to get loose from their bindings. Man, I tell you, it's always an adventure, single parenting and trying to work at the same time while you're trying to, you know, use those eyes that only moms seem to have there at the back of their heads. It's been interesting to say the least. They're hanging out down here at the shop, and I had them most of the summer last year while we were running. My wife was running her Airbnb, and so they would not disrupt guests and stuff. But they're getting better somewhat, it seems like, on not distracting me every minute of the day. But any case, it is application season, and as I'm saying that, I'm realizing I haven't put in for my tags yet. So I better get on that, because deadlines are coming up quick. So if you haven't done that already yourselves, you best get on it. We're doing another Patrick McManus story. This one's from Never Sniff a Gift Fish, and this one is The Elk Trappers. My wife and I were a few years out of college and already surrounded by babies of our own making. A simple, inexpensive hobby that had somehow gotten out of hand. At the time, I was writing for all the big game, high-paying national magazines. Unfortunately, they never bought anything I wrote. I did sell an occasional article to newspapers and regional magazines, but payment from these publications was small and slow in coming, often requiring that I go into the office to bend the editor's ear and sometimes his Adam's apple. During my best year as a freelance writer, our standard of living hovered constantly near the poverty level, but was never quite high enough for us to qualify as poor. Bun's hopes and dreams had diminished in both number and magnitude since our marriage, and she now spoke wistfully of the day when we might move into a quaint little hovel of our own. She was a marvelous, inventive cook, however, and no matter how little food we might have, she was always able to come up with a delicious dish of some sort. One of my favorites was her Boston baked bean, which she served on holidays. I'm probably the only person in the world who knows how to carve a bean properly. We used to tell the children it was a small turkey. "Who wants white meat?" I would ask. After a while, our situation became so bad that even the surly henchmen from the collection agency stopped coming around, possibly because I kept bumming small loans off them. Finally, I decided to commit the writer's ultimate act of despair, even though my own personal religion forbade such a drastic measure. Still, it seemed like the only way out of my predicament. I'd have to take a regular job. In a disgustingly short time, I landed a position with a local television station as a reporter-photographer in the news department. It was dreadful. As I signed the W-2 form, my whole life flashed before my eyes. Bun, however, was elated when I told her. "Wonderful," she cried. "We should celebrate. I'll go pop us a corn. What do you want to drink?" "A schooner of tap," I said. "I've cultivated a taste for chlorine." Right from the start, it did not get along with the news director at the station. He was a tough, burly individual with a face like a fist and a temper shorter than a snake's inseam. His name was Pat Hooper. It was a simple enough name, but for some reason I constantly messed it up in its pronunciation, particularly when we were doing a live show and I was supposed to say, "Now back to Pat Hooper." "You idiot," he would scream at me after the show. "You did it again." "Calm down, calm down," I'd say. "Now just tell me nicely and quietly what it was I did wrong. After all, I'm still learning the business, Hat." There were other problems. One time, rushing off to do an interview, I set one of the station's portable sound cameras on top of the news car while I loaded some other equipment. the next place I saw the camera was in my rearview mirror, bounding along behind my speeding car like a dog chasing after the family sedan. Then there was a foggy night. I called into the station from a payphone on the outskirts of town. Hat himself answered. "Boy, I never thought I'd be happy to hear your voice," he shouted over the phone. "The two-way radio in your news car must have conked out, huh? We've been trying to reach you for an hour. Anyway, we heard from the cops that some fool just drove his car into Manford Lake, drove right down the boat launch ramp. And get this, har har, he told the cops he thought the lake was just a big puddle. Oh, har har, yee, let me catch my breath. Okay, now, here's what I want you to do. Go out to Manford Lake as quick as you can and shoot some film and try to get an interview with a guy. It'll make a heck of a hilarious story for the late news." I waited for the news director's giggles until they died down. "Listen, Hat, I'm already out at Manford Lake, and I can tell you right now, you're not going to find the story at all hilarious." Probably the thing I hated most about being a television reporter was having to listen to a grown man sob so often. Hat and I had gotten off to a bad start, and our relationship had steadily deteriorated. After about a year, there was even some evidence that the news director had taken a personal dislike to me. Oh, there was nothing major, just little things I noticed, like the way he would slap me if I passed too near his desk. I decided to confront him face to face to get the matter out in the open where we could deal with it like two mature adults. During a quiet moment in the newsroom, I said, "Hat, there's something bothering you. I get the distinct impression that you're harboring some ill feelings towards me. Let's talk about it. What say, fella?" "Get this maniac away from me," Hat screamed to nobody in particular. "Now, right, there is a good example of what I mean," I said. "Look, if I upset you so much, why don't you just go ahead and terminate me?" "I might just do that," Hat replied. "Let's see, with time off for good behavior, I'll be back on the streets in 5 years. Then he sank back into a swivel chair and started doing his impression of a dog chewing hot pitch. Once he started acting silly like that, trying to converse with him in an intelligent manner was hopeless. I was oddly upset over this little exchange with Hat. Indeed, it seemed likely that he was thinking of firing me. Never before had I worked at a job where I had even the slightest fear of being fired. Usually, the news came as a total surprise. What I needed, I knew, was a big story, something that would change Hat's opinion of me as a television reporter. I needed something with human interest, something with animals in it. Big animals, wild animals, something with danger and courage and conflict, something with brave, dedicated men risking all to extend the horizons of human knowledge. And I knew of just a story, the elk trappers. A game biologist had recently told me about an elk migration study being conducted in a wilderness area of a nearby state. Two men had been hired to trap, that's right, trap elk. Once the elk were trapped, they were adorned with various paraphernalia for future tracking and identification on their travels about the mountains. I could hardly wait to tell Hat about my story idea. "What?" he said. "Elk trapping? Nonsense. What kind of stuff are you trying to pull on me now?" "I'm not kidding, Hat," I said. "It'll make great film. Of course, I'll have to get away from the station for a whole week, but..." "A whole week? You've got to stop reading my mind. I was just sitting here wondering when a good story on elk trapping might turn up." A few days later, I was flailing my old sedan over a route that the U.S. Forest Service cartographer had designated with two parallel dotted lines. Only too late did I discover that the dots represented mountain goat tracks. The cartographer, apparently having turned up some evidence that a mountain goat had managed to explore the region in rather aimless fashion sometime in the previous century. I could not help but agree that the goat's achievement had been heroic, but why the cartographer had chosen to commemorate it with dots was beyond my comprehension. A simple skull and crossbones with horns would have sufficed. At long last, I spotted the elk trapper's camp nestled in a grove of cedars near the foot of a precipice, the upper rim of which my vehicle was momentarily teetering upon. Having come this far, I was not about to turn back simply because of my near perpendicular descent of a few hundred feet. Shifting my weight, I tilted the car forward. Judges of free fall events probably would have disqualified me on the technicality that my car's tires occasionally brushed protruding rocks on the drop. The wall of the precipice swooped outward in a curve similar to that of a playground slide, and I was able to regain control of the vehicle in sufficient time to bring it to a screeching stop a good 6 inches from the tent of the elk trappers. In fact, for several moments after the stop, I continued to screech. as did the elk trappers, who had shot from the tent with a suddenness that caused me to wonder if the two of them might not have been sitting in some kind of spring-loaded catapult awaiting my arrival. Mort and Wally, as I'll call the trappers, turned out to be great guys, although not exactly the heroic types I had in mind for my television feature. Neither of them had any previous experience at trapping elk, but as the official who had hired them probably asked himself, who has? They were both college students majoring in zoology and had taken the elk trapping job for the summer as a means of acquiring some experience in the field. Mostly what they had acquired was a deep and intense hatred for elk. We've seen all the elk we ever want to see, Mort told me. We've seen a whole lot more elk than that, Wally put in. I stand corrected, Mort said. As we sat around the campfire that evening, Mort explained the trapping procedure to me. Basically, it consisted of luring an elk into a big corral with a salt bait rigged up in such a way that it dropped the corral gate behind the animal. The trappers would drive the elk into a confining chute where a tag was attached to its ear and a bright orange collar fastened around its neck. Then it was released. I hate to say this, fellas, I said, but it all sounds rather boring. Boring isn't the word for it, Wally said. I've had more excitement planting potatoes. Egads, I thought. Here I had risked my life and practically destroyed my car in the hope of shooting some exciting footage of men and elk in hoof-to-hand combat, and now it turned out to be nothing more than a tedious routine. Even though I had been in the television business for a short while, I knew that, above all else, there were standards of accuracy and truth and credibility to be maintained. One simply did not attempt to distort reality. So what that I had risked my life? So what that I had ruined my car? So what that I was about to lose my job? So what that we would have to fake it? How good are you fellows at feigning excitement? I asked. Let me see you do your bug-eyed with terror look. I must say that I was rather surprised the next morning when, at the crack of dawn, Mort leaped from his sleeping bag and strode briskly out of the tent in the manner of a man eager to be about his business. Perhaps, I thought, these two elk trappers take their job more seriously than they let on. After all, their nearest boss was a good day of hard travel away. There was nothing to prevent them from sleeping in until 10 or 11 if they wished. Mort then returned and climbed back into his sleeping bag. Get the fire going already? I asked. What for? Mort said. We usually don't get up until 10 or 11. After all, our nearest boss is... I know, I said. Mort had exaggerated slightly. By 10, we were hoofing our way up a mountain so steep the trail was only 18 inches away from my nose. At each gasp, I stripped small pine trees bare of needles. I had Charlie horses that could have run in the Preakness. My tongue felt like a strip of smoked jerky. And most tiresome of all was that Mort and Wally strolled along whistling and singing and tossing a frisbee back and forth. We eventually arrived at the elk trap, which looked more like one of the stockades pioneers used for defense among the Indians, and it contained an elk. A huge cow was rushing back and forth. The whites of her eyes flashed with fear and rage. We caught one, I shouted. We caught an elk. Mort and Wally stared disgustedly, first at me, then at the elk. Listen, I don't want to disappoint you or anything, Wally said, but this is going to be real boring. I wouldn't even bother setting up your camera if I were you. He had not disappointed me. Well, since I've come this far, I might as well shoot whatever I can. While Mort and Wally ran around the trap shouting and throwing small stones at the elk, trying to drive it into the confining chute at one end, I shot some rather dull film of the activity, then set my camera up next to the chute so I could get some good close-ups of the elk. Eventually the cow, apparently thinking she saw an escape route, charged into the chute. Wally rammed a pole through the chute behind her to keep her from backing out, and Mort slid another pole across the chute above her to keep her from jumping while the various paraphernalia were attached. Are you sure she can't get out of there? I yelled at Mort, who was about to attach a bright orange collar to the elk. No way, Mort shouted back. These poles are 6 inches thick. Take an elephant to break one of them. I told you this was going to be boring. Crack! The elk had just snapped the pole that crossed the chute above her. Then, like a four-legged mountain climber, she went up the 10-foot-high wall of the chute where she bashed another pole in two with her head, making an opening about the size of a basketball. She's getting out! I yelled. No way, Mort said calmly. The hole is too small for her to get... Before he had finished the sentence, the elk had wriggled through the hole and was plummeting toward us. Even as the shadow of the descending elk expanded around us, I switched the camera to on. This was my chance. For 10 seconds, chaos reigned. First, the elk was on Mort and Wally. Then Mort and Wally were on the elk, and the elk was on me. Wally went by with the elk after him, and Mort after the elk. I was going up a tree, and the elk was coming down. There were shouts and bellows and grunts and groans. There were curses that must have stunted the growth of trees. Then the cow got her bearings and set a straight course for the Continental Divide, leaving me on my back in the dust, Wally perched on top of the elk trap and Mort wearing the orange collar. And I had it all on film. Geez, Hat said as he previewed my film back at the station. What was that bit there? That round thing that shot past? I think it was a close-up of a dust-coated eyeball. Now this blurry... ay, ay, ay. Now this blur here is where I jumped the log. That odd shape that flashed by was Mort with the elk on his shoulders. This is a great shot of some dust and blue sky. And here, I glanced at Hat, who was studying me thoughtfully. Probably wondering how he could ever have so misjudged my talent as a television reporter. You know something, he said? What's that? I said, 5 years isn't all that long. And besides, I could use the rest. Oh, my goodness. Oh, no. That was... The elk trappers. Doesn't sound like an activity I'm going to take up anytime soon. All right, thanks for tuning in.
If you have a question, topic, or guest that you'd like to hear about, log on to iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Rate the podcast, and in the review, leave your question, topic, or guest suggestion. Any questions posted will be answered at the beginning of the next recorded podcast. Topics and guest suggestions will be considered and pursued. Additionally, the rating will help the podcast grow. You can further support the podcast by logging on to the Stalker Stickbows website and purchasing a Western Bowhunter Podcast t-shirt or window sticker from the Stalker store. Thanks for your support. I come down here.